I'd like to introduce our speaker just for a few moments before he speaks. Dr. Bradley chairs the African American Studies program at St. Louis University as an associate professor of history, and he is a leading force in our community for love and compassion. And he is a recognized scholar, and he is a true activist for peace. And he was our Clark Lecturer 2 years ago. And now I'd like to introduce Dr. Stephen Bradley.
Good people, thank you so much for letting me stand up here. The old people used to say there is a place for sinners, and I guess that First Unitarian is the place for the sinners. Thank you kindly for that. Thank you kindly for that. I am serious about this. I had such a wonderful time when I was here doing the Clark Lecture. I think was it a year or two ago? 2 years ago. And even before then, I recognized what First Unitarian was and what First Unitarian does. So with that in mind, let me just say this real quickly. Let me thank, and I want you to thank with me the brother John Noel, whose spirit is one of the best and most righteous that I've come across. And sometimes we don't recognize the people who are working the hardest on behalf of us. So can we please give him a round of applause? I'd also like to say hey to my good fella Jerry O'Brien. He's somewhere out here. There he is. There's my man. We go back like recliners, and so that's my man over there. And I'd also like to recognize for this morning, Sister Taylor and Sister Haynes. I'm not being covetous, but I want what you have. I don't know how you manage to do those things, but you are able to move people's spirits, and I thank you for that. I appreciate you all. You come from the lineage, the spirit of men like James Reeb, who answered a call in 1965, and he didn't have to go down to Selma, Alabama. He didn't have to do that. You all don't have to care about freedom, peace, and justice, but you do, and I thank you for that, and so I recognize who you are. And so today I'd like to just speak a little bit about this moment in which we're living, and this moment, this. Today, I have to admit to you, this may be uncomfortable today, and I may not ever get invited back, but I'll take my chances on this because at least in one place, the church house, you're supposed to tell the truth. And so I'm going to try to do this as briefly as possible, but I have to tell you, I come from the Baptist tradition, and so if you all planned on watching the game today, you may not make it. Sorry about that. Okay, I'm on it. But in this moment of severe racial tension and blatant oppression that we're witnessing, it's becoming increasingly difficult to be human. We can file away into our silos based on Facebook and Twitter and MSNBC and Fox News. We can communicate with people we agree with all day and all night long. I'm not sure that's a good thing. As the various groups gravitate to their ideological camps, it's becoming quite easy to otherize human beings. To otherize human beings, that is, to make others of humans. And I argue that that's spiritually and practically destructive. the great 1960s composer, Burt Bacharach. Some of us remember. I don't. I just know the music. Burt Bacharach, he wrote the words, what the world needs now is love, sweet love, right? And the world that he was living in at the moment was indeed in need of love, sweet love. In the 1960s, there was a war in the backdrop of American society, a war in which the nation was involved in a nation far off that very few people could find on the map. There was racial prejudice and discrimination that was prevalent. There was poverty. There was sexism. And I'm thanking goodness that that no longer exists. That was the time that he was living in, and he called for love, sweet love. And he was right to do that. But there is another, a little bit later, maybe a decade later, one of the greatest to ever live and my all-time favorite, Stevie Wonder. Stevie Wonder, and some of you know of Stevie Wonder, but Stevie Wonder, he had made another appeal, a similar appeal. And his was that love's in need of love. How many of you all have heard that song before? Oh, you have to listen. You have to understand. Follow what the genius, Stevie Wonder, Stevelyn Roberts Wonder, follow what he says. He says, I have serious news to pass on to everybody. What I'm about to say could mean the world's disaster, could change your joy and laughter to tears and pain. It's that love is in need of love today. Don't delay, send yours in right away. Hate's going around, breaking many hearts. Stop it, please, before it goes too far. The force of evil plans to make you its possession, and it will, if you let it, destroy everybody. We all must take precautionary measures if love and peace you treasure. Then you'll hear me when I say, oh, that love is in need of love today. Let me not be sacrilegious in disagreeing with Stevie Wonder, but let me try to amend that statement and that of Burt Bacharach. We're in need of more than love today. Love is in need of more than love today. To be sure, Brother Stevie is right. Hate is trying to break us down. And of course we need love. But I argue that even more than love or in addition to love, what we need is grace. What we need is grace. And this is what I mean. Grace, in my mind, is the outward acknowledgement, of our humanness, which includes the frailties and the faults and the flaws that we all have. What I mean is that love by itself is too easy to point in a direction. It's easy for us to point to the people we like and say, I love you. What's unnatural, however, is for us to point to our enemies and to say, I love you. That's unnatural. It's very difficult for us. But that is what grace is. Now, we have enemies. I have enemies. I'll be the first to admit it. And my enemy is anyone who prevents me from being human. And if I'm being truthful in this beautiful church, I'll fight and die if I have to make sure that myself and my family and my people are able to have the opportunity to be human. And I'm just telling you the truth. But I have to ask myself daily, Why does it have to come to that? Why does it have to be that serious? Why do I have to make such a proclamation? And let me be clear, there are people in different camps right now. There's people hollering Black Lives Matter and Blue Lives Matter and All Lives Matter and that sort of thing. I don't mind saying that I do support the idea of Black Lives Mattering. And I am thankful for those who remind people that Black Lives Matter in this moment. But we're all in need of grace. And I guess what I'm trying to say is that I'm as tribalistic as the next person. I would hate for you to think otherwise. But I need to recognize and issue grace. This is how we're doing things today. Okay? We're acting as though we deserve these days, aren't we? We're acting as if we've done something that warrants us living these days out. No. I argue that this is a gift. That when we woke up and had a chance to breathe this morning, it's nothing that we did. This is a gift. And we have to treat it like that. And so with that in mind, how dare we not grant forgiveness and grace to each other, including the others that are our enemies? When I saw and read about a man by the name of Terrence Crutcher in Tulsa, Oklahoma, an African-American man whose car was disabled when police officers arrived, and as a result of his interaction with the police officers who claimed to believe he was under the influence of drugs, they tased and shot him to death. When I heard and read of this story, I couldn't help but think of the story of the Good Samaritan. The Good Samaritan. Do you all remember this story? Remember this? Luke chapter 10. And Jesus said, and I hope that I'm blessed for reading this and we're blessed for understanding it. A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho when he fell into the hands of robbers. They stripped him of his clothes and beat him and went away, leaving him half dead. Follow me on this. A priest happened to be going down the same road, and when he saw the man, he passed by on the other side. So too a Levite. Ooh, excuse me. So too a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, and passed by on the other side. Ah, but a Samaritan, as he traveled, came where the man was. And when he saw him, he took pity on him. He went to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. Then he put the man on his own donkey, took him to an inn, and took out two silver coins. The next day he took out two silver coins and gave them to the innkeeper, saying, "Look after him, and when I return, I will reimburse you for any extra expense you may have." Jesus asked, "Which of these three do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of the robbers?" And this is important, because when I think about the situation with Crutcher, I think about somebody in need. Now, this is revolutionary, what we see with the Samaritan. And I don't mince words when I say revolutionary. He didn't have to stop. Two people passed him by. The man who was half dead was not the Samaritan's people. Wasn't from the Samaritan's tribe. Wasn't his family. Nowhere in the scripture did I read that the Samaritan asked him, Are you a good person or a bad person? Nowhere in the scripture did I read. Did he ask, had you smoked weed lately? No. The Samaritan acted outside of himself. Acted outside of himself to do on behalf of someone else. And that's the point. That's the point. And so, how does grace look today? Because that's what the Samaritan offered. How does it look today? We clearly see people and things that need our help. We clearly see these things. Driving through these neighborhoods to get to this church, we saw someone or something that needed help. And not just help, but our help. But our help. Part of it is this recognition that Brother Noel read about. Part of it is the recognition, but part of it is the willingness to get outside of ourselves to do it. And so I guess what I'm saying is we're in a place where it becomes far too easy to make monsters of each other. And see if you can follow what I'm saying, because I think this is one of the most dangerous things that's happening to human beings right now. Two things that are happening. One is that we're getting used to, or have gotten used to, oppression to the point where we don't recognize it anymore. And this is important because the Samaritan, before he came upon the man in need, two people had walked by. As if it were normal, as if oppression was normal, as if somebody being hurt was normal. We've gotten used to that. That's one of the most dangerous things that's happened to us. And the person hurt in that story, the story of the Good Samaritan, this story could have been about black and white. This story could have been about Muslim and Christian. This story could have been about police and Black Lives Matter. It could have been about any groups. But this is important. We've gotten used to oppression, and so we have to get to the point where we recognize it for what it is. And the second dangerous thing that's confronting us now is that we've made monsters out of our oppressors. And that's a dangerous thing to do. And I'll tell you why it's dangerous. I'll tell you why. Because if I make a monster out of my oppressor, then at that point I need nothing more from my oppressor. That I set my oppressor off somewhere and make them other than human. And that means the oppressor is not redeemable. And that means we no longer have a responsibility to each other. And I'm not sure that's what grace is. The Creator, whoever she or he or whatever, I'm sure they're not pleased with the way we treat each other, but we still get to breathe every day. This is the point that I'm making. So when I grew up, my mother's from Port Gibson, Mississippi, which is a tiny little town in Mississippi, just outside the Delta. And she couldn't go to the library to read but on one day a week. And she told stories of knowing where the Klan was and that sort of thing. And in history, one of the things that we're good at is making monsters of groups like the Ku Klux Klan and things like this. It's easy to do, right? We can't understand how people could act this way. And to be sure, they dwelled in evil spirits. Yes, indeed. I'm no defender of the Ku Klux Klan or anything like that. But I'll say this, they were people. They are people. And as people, as humans, this quest to be human, we have to recognize that whatever is in those humans is also in us. And we have to figure out a way to check those impulses and to help others to check those impulses. And this is dangerous. This is dangerous. Because if we make them into monsters, we don't have to do that kind of work, which is the most difficult work. Now, we like to think of the Klan as being something in the past. Of course, I'm from Washington State. Central Washington is where I'm from. Small town called Yakima, Washington. 30 minutes from Yakima, Washington is another town called Ellensburg. You didn't want your Washington geography class today. You said there's a game on, something more important than this. Just recently, Ku Klux Klan members were on the college campus handing out materials and information. The students checked these Klan members, and the community came together to push away these Klan members. This is important. But we have to ask ourselves, what is it that would make these Klan members feel so threatened? What in their humanness makes them feel that way? It's not a thing of the past. This oppression that we talk about is not a thing of the past. Now, I asked, who are we to judge? Who are we not to be in a position to forgive? Now, again, I'm no defender of the Klan. I'm no defender of these people who have perpetrated evil acts throughout history. I'm no defender, and I realize this is a nonprofit place, so I won't go too far into this. I'm no defender of Donald Trump and his behavior. But let's not, in this beautiful church, and my man was going hard on the piano. I forgot his name, but thank you, brother. Yeah, he was going hard on the piano. Let's not act as though, and maybe I'm talking too much, let's not act as though we've told every truth on our taxes. Now, don't raise your hand or anything like that. I don't know who's in here. Maybe we'll do it this way. Let's not act as though we've never objectified women's bodies, the people in here. And I'm talking about the men and women in here. Let's not act like that. Now, Trump seems to make for an easy target because of the way that he moves around. It's easy to point at him. But it's important that we recognize that he's nothing more than human. And what he needs from us is to be checked, indeed. But he'll need grace. This is hard to say. This is difficult to say. And I hope that you all are registered and ready to vote, by the way. Difficult to say. But I can't afford to make Trump or anybody else a monster. I can't afford that. Not do that and in the same time be good in my spirit and appreciate the grace that's been given to me. I can't afford that. And so we easily and quickly label people as criminals, right? And we feel okay about throwing people into the prison industrial complex. And Brother Noel and I were just talking about this. He used to work in a institution where he helped to educate people whom we think it's okay to throw away. We think it's okay to throw these people away in this prison industrial complex and then make money from them. And then never allow them to make money again when they come out. Woo, this is cold. And I'm talking about a goodly amount of black and brown people, a goodly amount of poor people. And we feel okay, and we do this quickly. And it takes grace to recognize that we've created the circumstances for these criminals to create, to do these crimes. And these crimes are often crimes of making a living. These crimes are often crimes of if I can put it plainly in the church house, of worshiping idols. Idols in the way of drugs or money or things. We've created these circumstances. And it's important that we recognize that. And that's where grace comes in, recognizing the grace that we receive. The hard part is issuing grace. This is important. And so the lack of grace allows us to see certain groups immediately as criminal, right? Think about it this way. I'll give you two examples. One, I told you I grew up in the Northwest where agriculture was the way that everybody made money. And so undocumented workers, there were many, many, many undocumented workers where I grew up. My friends, when I grew up, were the sons and daughters of undocumented workers. And back then, the people called them illegal aliens. That's what they called them, illegal aliens. And I always thought that was an interesting phrase when we started. And today it's been shortened to illegals and this sort of thing. I always thought this was fascinating, that the people that came to work, the people that came to work in these orchards / plantations, did you hear the sister telling the story about the plantation? Now, we laugh about it. Now, I went out to try cherries one time, to pick cherries, and I've been out in apple fields when people were working, and all you see is brown necks and brown hands picking and reaching. And I've been down by the riverside where their housing, their makeshift housing was created, where the people at 5 a.m. get up, 4 a.m. get up to work. Illegally. It's interesting how that group of people got cast as illegals, but the people who own the plantation, I'm sorry, orchards, who knowingly hire undocumented workers, never got labeled as illegals. Do you see? This is important, and this is part of recognition. This is part of recognition, and I think that that's an important way to think about things. I think about when we think of crime, we have certain images in our minds of criminals. When we think about theft and stealing and that kind of thing, in my mind, I think about John Strumpf of Wells Fargo. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Here's somebody who use people's good names to steal money. And this happened to be a good white man. And he's benefited from theft and directly taken what wasn't his. But I want you to observe the way in our media today, and I'm sorry if this is uncomfortable for you all, but I have to tell the truth. They may never let me on this microphone again. Did I tell you I wanted to be a preacher when I was young? I did. Look, I wanted to drive a Cadillac and wear suits. And best of all, like, the money all went to the preacher's office after, like, offering. And so I just wanted to be where the money went. And so anyhow, I'll say that I have to tell you the truth as I know it. But I want you to pay attention to how that's covered on the news. How this man who orchestrated the theft of millions of dollars, how he's portrayed in the news, in contrast to a boy who steals cigarillos from a convenience store, or a man who sells loose illegal cigarettes on the street, or a man who sells illegal CDs and DVDs in front of a store. I want you to pay attention to that. This is important because when we talk about criminals and this kind of thing, It's easy for us to cast an image onto certain people, and it's much harder for us to see other people for what they are. And this is important. And my man Jerry O'Brien knows this, working at the university level. When we think of drug dealers and drug users and this sort of thing, that has a face too. That has a face too. We see the people who go to jail and prison for drug dealing and drug using. We see the people, they happen to have faces like mine, brown faces, frequently. But if I can be clear about this, I've worked at the university level for more than a decade, almost a decade and a half. I can assure you that some of the biggest population of drug users and movers happen to be well-to-do young white people. This is hard for us to take. This is hard for us to take, but we have to confront this if we're going to deal with, recognize, and issue grace. We have to live up to that. That's the first part. Now, I'm running out of time. This will be my first closing. In the Baptist tradition, you get three. I know Noel is like, look, we're on a time. Yeah. So, I want to suggest something. I want to suggest this, that race in today's world, and we know this, that race, sex, politics, those are things that could land you in a barroom brawl. None of you good church people are ever at the bar, so you wouldn't know that. But I'm telling you from a sinner's perspective. Look, he laughed a little too loud. But I'm telling you that race is something created by humans. It's something created by humans. But grace is something larger than ourselves. It's something that was given to humans. And we would be fortunate and wise to try to issue grace to each other. That would be aspirational. And so as I'm closing, I'm going to read from the New International Version of the Bible. And I'm going to read from Romans chapter 3, verses 20 through 24. This is what it reads. It says, "Therefore, no one will be declared righteous in his sight by observing the law. Rather, through the law we become conscious of sin. But now a righteousness from God, apart from law, has been made known, to which the law and the prophets testify. This righteousness from God comes through faith in Jesus Christ to all who believe. There is no difference for all have sinned, and all fall short of the glory of God, and are justified freely by his grace through the redemption that came by Jesus Christ, by Christ Jesus." Now, I don't know your faith tradition personally, but I do know this, that the danger we run is thinking that one is above another. That's the danger we run. Let us go forth and recognize the wrongs, check them and condemn them, but issue grace to one another. Thank you so much.